Ah, here he is, the great Brian Schimmel. I like this guy a lot. He wrote the theme music for my TV show when we had that horrible TV. I say horrible because I just hated TV, but it was a great show. And Brian wrote the theme music. He is a virtuoso. I don't think it's too much to say that, right?
Ta-da!
Look at your outfit today. This is the most super gay outfit in the world. He's wearing the short shorts. He's got the vest on. You're in good shape, though.
And the new tat.
What's the new one? Let me see it.
That one.
They're not going to bury you in the Jewish cemetery, hey? You know that.
You know, they keep saying that, but I mean, on my left arm, I got Hebrew. On my right arm, I
they
got
don't
more
care.
Hebrew.
They don't care. They'll throw you out.
Oh, I know. But, you know.
They'll put you with the Yorks and the Blacks and everybody else.
But you see, my attitude is...
Yeah.
My attitude is, once I've taken the last breath...
You don't care.
I don't care.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, in the words of John Lennon, I've left one car and I'm getting into another.
Is that what he said?
I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, it's leaving one life and getting into another. So he said,
beautiful. I like that.
He said, I'm getting out of one car and into another.
Now, Brian, you know I'm a fan of all your work. I think that you're a genius. I mean, I've seen you compose songs right there and then. You sit down in front of a keyboard and it just comes to you. And this is, out of all the talents in the universe, this has got to be the best one to have, isn't it? Doesn't it feel good?
Well, you know what?
How does that feel?
I consider myself really, really, you know, I mean, the words blessed and privileged and lucky and all that are used and overused and hackneyed, and not that I'm knocking those, because they are real. But I get up every morning and I get up and do and earn a living doing what I love most. And how many people can actually say that?
How many
people can actually say,
one in a million.
I love my job and I can't wait?
One in a million.
You know, and just to answer your earlier comment, your earlier little...
What about you being in such good shape? You're feeling
no, sick? not bringing a keyboard in.
Yeah, thanks for that, by the way.
Yeah, you know, you see, I did think about that.
You didn't want to schlep it?
Well, you kind of go at age 50. I'm a bit past that.
Thanks. Yeah. Here I was hoping to hear some music from you. Now you're too big. You're too good for me.
No, you know what? You know what? In all seriousness, it's a thing of. I think a lot of people who do know my work, as you do, kind of have an association with me at the keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
And
you want to break away?
I have broken away.
Okay.
I have. Sure. I'm not that guy anymore.
Tell me who you are now, because, I mean, how old are you?
I'm 50.
50. Now, I don't know a lot of guys who are in the shape you're in at 50, who've been through the life that you've been through. I mean, my God. I look at a meth addiction.
Yes.
Yeah, this is amazing. Living with HIV, which most people would have said 10 years ago, bye-bye, Brian.
16 years it's been.
They would have said bye-bye.
Yeah.
Nice to have known you.
Well, you know, when I was when I got infected in 97, 98, at that time, it was not unrealistic.
Yeah.
To think, okay, I'm not going to make... 50 years old, and I honestly didn't think I would make 50.
Well, congrats for that. Well, I mean, I think that's you're not only not for your own purposes only, because I mean we're thrilled to have someone who's talented here, but
sure,
but for people who feel there's no hope when they hear this.
Well, you know, Gareth, my ethos in life, and especially in the last couple of years, of the fact that I've not only reached 50, but reached it in this kind of state of mental health and physical health, and also the fact that I have started in the last 7 years, I have been lecturing at WITS.
Mm-hmm.
My whole ethos in life is all about inspiring people, inspiring and motivating and honestly, I'm making a difference. And for me, it's far more important to take the talent and to use it in that way. And that's why when the board of the youth orchestra approached me and said, we'd like you on board and you're the right kind of energy, you know, we want. I was like, it totally fits in with who I am right now, because it's all about supporting the youth who are less privileged.
Yeah.
And by giving them a means.
And talented young people, not just young.
Hugely talented. Right, I mean, currently there are about 650 kids.
Let me just say that without your stutter, the interview would already have been finished by now. Now, tell me, how did that? Yes. I mean, well, let's start at the beginning because we get to the youth orchestra in a moment. I think this is a fascinating thing, and I think you're going to do amazing stuff there. I really do.
Thank you.
I mean, I've seen you at work. You're very inspiring of people. We got this message before you even came in this morning.
Yeah.
This is from someone called Charissa. She says, he used to lecture me. First thing he told us.
Carissa. Yes.
Right. It's Carissa. I've been saying it wrong the whole time.
Carissa.
Okay. First thing he told us was he has a speech impediment. The knowledge he spewed forth from his mouth eclipsed that stutter. He is amazing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's the kind of thing. I suppose you inspire people, and this is going to be
If served. That's the kind of thing if that's the work I'm doing,
yes,
that for me makes me richer than any guy who owns anything in Clifton.
Yeah, that we were talking about earlier.
Exactly.
Right. So let's start at the beginning.
Yeah.
You grow up as a young kid. You've got a stutter, which already makes a lot of people very introverted.
Yes.
They become intimidated by the world because they think, I can't measure up. I've got this impediment that's going to keep me back.
Right.
Not you.
Well, yes, it did for a while because as a kid, I mean, and I also, I don't sort of add the whole thing of anti-bullying in my whole current, carry on. But I was that kid who was not a sportsman,
right?
Who had a speech impediment, who was shy. Believe it or not.
You were shy?
I was shy.
No way.
Because of the speech.
Mubs, you don't believe that.
No, not in those shorts. Not for a second.
Not in those short shorts. My God.
Honey, if you saw...
I can see balls from here. Honey, that's how short those shorts
are. Honey, if you saw pictures of me, I was your dictionary definition of nerd. I was bullied. I was called a pansy, a spaz, a homo, all those words.
But Brian, that must hurt as a kid.
It hurt like shit. Okay.
Would you say you were really badly damaged?
I was. I was because every single day, what you do is go to school terrified. and you go to school and terrified of, are you going to get punched? Are you going to get beaten? Are you going to get verbally abused?
If you're 50 now, that was the 70s. So
yeah, it was.
I mean, 70s. That was a tough time because we didn't have any of this touchy feely stuff. Now, I mean, you would have been not only beaten up at school, but then you would have been hit by the teachers or the headmaster because you were in a fight, even if you were the victim.
Because you were caned then, yes.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, you couldn't...
Did you get into this situation every day at school?
Well, I wouldn't say every single day, but it was my general school life.
Oh, my God.
The only thing that I had absolutely... I had absolute confidence in was when there was a school play or a school musical or anything that had to do with anything of that kind or a talent show. Mm-hmm. That's when suddenly
you were the king.
Wallflower just became confident. But I wasn't a sportsman, and so I wasn't one of the oaks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even though now you're probably in better shape than all those guys, right? That's irony.
Well, the irony is, I mean, I'm just going to fast forward a few years. I mean, I've since become, in the last 4 or 5 years, I've become really, really close friends with guys who I knew at school.
Yeah.
And, there's an interesting story of the one of them who I connected with on Facebook who couldn't believe it was me.
Was he one of the guys who beat you up and was horrible to you?
Well, he didn't beat me up, but he was one of those who was amongst the crowd and who joined in the crowd.
He didn't exactly reach out and help you.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the one day he and I started speaking on Facebook, and he lives near me, and I went and saw him. And I walked into his office. I hadn't seen him in 30 years.
Yeah.
And the first thing he said to me, he said, "I want to apologize to you."
Wow. How did that feel?
I knew exactly what he was saying, but I sort of kind of cast it off, and I went, "What for?" And he said, "No." He said, "I have teenage kids, in high school." Uh-huh. And I see what happens with them being marginalized because of being different. And he said, and I was one of those guys who didn't understand what being different is. And he said, I've heard you on radio, I've seen your shows, and he said, I'm really sorry. And I said, you know what? I'm standing in front of you. If I was still carrying all that shit, I said, I wouldn't be here.
It could have killed you, yeah.
I said, I wouldn't be here right now.
It's a big thing to...
And
did it make you feel at all better that he was man enough to apologize? Because I once met up with a dude who I was at school with, and we weren't particularly nice to him, and I also felt the need to apologize. But I just hoped that it made, in some small way, some kind of token contribution to him feeling a bit better.
You know what? Gareth, I think the saying is, that for closure and for forgiveness, that there is never an end date.
Right. Should always try to be.
Yeah. And I mean, since then, I mean, he and I are best friends.
That's brilliant.
We hang out. I go to his house. I was with him and his wife New Year's Eve.
Do you sometimes just take him around the back of the house and beat him up just to make things even more equal?
Listen, when he sees me now, he's like, I'm scared of you.
Wow.
So that was that. And I mean, you talk about the speech. It was bad then. I mean, my fear was such that even walking into a bank, into a restaurant, and speaking with a waiter, I kind of look at the menu and go, what can I say, not what can I eat?
Yeah.
Because you're so afraid of being mocked and rejected and thought of as less because of having a speech impediment. So certainly in those days, I wasn't getting laid.
But sure.
Because you have to like start the conversation and go, how's it, bro?
You have to start somewhere.
Yeah. And
what age did you sort of become aware of your sexuality? Because that,
very young.
That was not enough. As if God, if you believe in God, didn't give you enough to deal with the stutter and the fact that you've got this amazing talent that you can only use on school play day or on the day that there's a talent show, while all the other jocks are getting attention and love and confidence throughout their school careers. Now he also gives you, because what really annoys me, and I'm sure it bothers you too, is when people say that, these weird people who think that someone would choose to be gay, like they would choose the hardest route, because it must be, I mean, I can't imagine how difficult it must be for somebody to not only have to put up with all the normal things that all of us have to deal with in life when it comes to relationships.
Well, you know what?
But also to then have to put up with people's prejudice.
It's all, but you know, I say it again and again. We are not born prejudiced. You know, a baby does not come out of the womb with a list of
I don't like these people.
I don't like these people. No. It's ingrained in them. It's ingrained in them.
It's brainwashing.
Yes, by parents, by peers, and teachers.
Society, religion, those kinds of things.
It's ingrained.
Yeah.
And exactly that. I mean, why would you choose the path of most resistance? But at the age of 5 and 6 years old, my mom would come home and find me at her dressing table putting her makeup on and wearing her shoes. Hello.
So she went, well, he's so eccentric.
Well,
but she didn't see a future of cocks for you.
No, she didn't. Although, you know, the thing about my mom is that she was the one who somehow all my life she understood it. All her life she understood it. It was unfortunately, it was my late father who, in short form, he was born in Germany in, mm-hmm. in the 20s. He was 17 when Hitler started the war in Poland. And he fought in the war, and he ended up in South Africa in 1955.
Aren't we glad he did?
Right. You know. But with that life as his youth, to have a son who came out of the womb singing
a chorus line.
Singing the score of a chorus line. Okay.
It must have been tough for him.
You know, yeah. And wearing makeup at 5 years old, he didn't know what the hell to do with me.
Sure.
So I had a really, really, besides having a hard relationship at school, I had a really hard relationship at home.
Please tell me somewhere in the Schimmel family tree there's someone who didn't suffer so much. I mean, between world wars and having the stutter and having to deal with prejudice.
Do you know what? Yeah, do you know, I'm the baby in the family. I was the afterthought. And do you know what? Everything which has happened to me, I mean, and as cliched as it sounds, everything that's happened has made me who I am today. And I know that that sounds hell of a cliched.
No, it's not. This is very important.
But
what's the point of being alive if you don't discover who you are?
But I also,
and you don't like who you
but
are.
But I also believe it's a choice. You know, when life hands you lemons, you can either go, it's sour, or you can make lemonade. And that, however cliche that is, that the reason a cliche is a cliche is because it has value.
There's some inherent truth in it.
And whether, you know, and whether it's overcoming that, whether it's gaining confidence in my speech. I mean, if you had told me even 15 years ago, if you said that I'd be lecturing students at WITS, I would have been, are you out of your mind?
Because of the stutter?
Because of the stutter. I still had a fear of it.
Right.
But it was eventually reaching a point of going, I don't give a shit. It's no longer an impedance. Oh. It's no longer a handicap. It comes with who I am.
Does it get worse when you are in a stressful situation?
Yes.
Okay, so in other words, the more relaxed you are, the less you will stutter.
So I'm so relaxed now. I mean, who
knew? You kind of are. I mean, you have become a little more relaxed now. But when you came in, no, I understood. For those people who are wondering, you're sitting at home or in the car listening, and you hear this, it's not the buffering on your internet. It's Brian talking. So. I think that is a huge amount to overcome. My God. I mean, to put up with that, did music save you?
It did, and it always has. It always has. I started playing piano at age 5. And the turning point moment, which I've actually quoted in the preface of my recent master's thesis, which was really, really profound, was when I was 9 years old, I was at my aunt's farm, Sylvia Brumberg, and she lived in Zim. And in school holidays, I'd be packed off to go and spend, you know, that time there with her. And she had a pile of records of old vinyls, which I've noticed amongst the youth, vinyls become cool.
Yeah, hipsters especially love that shit.
That's become cool. But, you know, that time it was only vinyl.
Okay.
And I would play her vinyls day in, day out, day in, day out. And I was 9 years old, and the one on the afternoon, I saw this very interesting cover in tie-dye purple and yellow, and the very, very interesting title, Jesus Christ Superstar.
Right.
And I looked at this and I'm going, I'm a Yid. So Jesus Christ Superstar sort of didn't mean much to me. But I thought it was another vinyl.
So you put it on.
So I put it on.
Yeah.
And it was honestly, in that moment, I had a religious experience. It was which had nothing to do with...
With Jesus or with Andrew Jesus. Lloyd Webber?
Exactly.
Yeah, all right.
But it was going... That there was something in that music, something in the sound of wailing guitars, combined with lyrics and drama and all of that, that I just went... I've come home. This is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And I think...
What a moment.
To have that moment at nine years old is a rare thing. And it was in that moment that I just knew, I thought, I'm going to end up working in theater. And it's where I want to work, mainly. I didn't know that I would become a bona fide arranger, which I have become. And when, in fact, now most of my work actually comes from. And it was a constant pursuit of that. To come back to your earlier question about sexual awareness, I mean,
yeah, when did that happen?
Are you asking me when the awareness happened, or when I had my first blowjob?
Let's cover that one second. Let's go to the first. When did you first go? Okay, you know what? I'm not like these other boys. They're all really interested in the girls, and I'm not. When did that happen?
I think it was started to happen even in mid primary school, because
that young, huh?
Yeah, I didn't know what gay was or what homo was.
Nobody even spoke about it then.
No, but you sort of know that you have different feelings. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a sportsman, like I say. And when we were, you know, at mandatory once a week PT in the winter or in the summer, you went swimming.
Yeah.
You know, I had prying eyes.
You wanted to see the packages?
I wanted to see the packages, and, you know...
You hung around in the change room a little bit longer than you had to?
Hung being the operative word.
Right. Right.
You know, and...
Any embarrassing situations ensue in those change rooms?
No, but one very interesting story, though, is in high school, the one thing I did play, and there was only one reason I played it, is I played water polo.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm the team captain.
Okay.
Was just the hottest boy in high school. He was the jock. Okay. This guy and I are still now I'm the best friends. Because he was a prefect of mine. I was in what is now considered grade 9.
Okay.
And he was in grade 12.
Okay.
He was a prefect. And somehow, I think it had to do because he was a role model and he was...
Would you say you were kind of infatuated with him?
Oh, totally.
Okay, so you were obsessed then, maybe.
Okay. But he was a role model, he was a jock, and he was hot. And I just also sensed that he had compassion with that. And the one day, I don't know how I had the courage, but I wrote a note, and all I said was, please will you meet me at break behind the hall? I really need a friend.
Wow. And then he came and dropped his pants,
and you took
him into your mouth?
No? I wish it was that. but... There it was, and this knight in...
I thought you were leading into the second story.
And this knight in shining armor arrived.
Yeah, yeah. So he pitched up, which is
and
big,
he became
right?
my friend and my protector. And he's been that ever since.
Sounds like a good guy.
Yeah. But then, you know, it was literally at age 13, there was a guy who lived on the same street as me.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in school together.
Right.
And we had a pool. He didn't.
Okay.
And so in the summer, he'd be at my house and we'd swim. And it just happened. On the one day, we were 13 years old, and he and I just kind of started touching each other in the pool.
Hmm.
And it has remained a complete secret as to who it is, and I will never reveal who it is.
Was it in the pool that all of this happened?
Well, it started in the pool.
In the pool it started?
It started in the pool, and it continued for the next 4 years.
Wow.
And it was
a long time.
It was the biggest kept secret in the school.
Was he... you were both in the closet, obviously?
I was in the closet. He has since gone on to be very happily married.
Oh.
Has children.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
And...
So for him, it was a dalliance.
It was a dalliance.
A four-year-long...
But, you know, it was called convenience, because it was a case of that thing of, like, if his folks were out, he'd call me and say that the house is free. Come over.
You'd go over for a quickie.
And vice versa.
Right.
So, you know, it was really, really serving needs.
All right. But you never got with the water polo team captain. That never happened.
No. I did in the movie in my mind, yes.
Okay. And do you still continue to? Is that the big fantasy now? Even now?
He still has it. But, you know, he's still got, I mean, at the age of 50 something,
mm-hmm.
he's still hot. But, you know, nah.
No, not going to happen.
No.
All right, so let's get back to the music for a second.
Yes.
When you started composing and arranging music,
yeah.
And you knew you wanted to do musicals.
Yes.
What was the first sort of step? Because how do you even begin a career in that kind of thing? A lot of people ask me, how do you get into radio? But that's easier. How do you get into particularly arranging and composing music? It's a very hard route to choose, right?
Well, I think not even realizing it, I was choosing a route that not every musician chooses. So it's very much a niche avenue.
Right.
And what had happened is I had studied music at Technikon Pretoria, which is now TUT.
Right.
And during, let me backtrack, because there are a few moments.
I mean, this might be helpful to people who want to do this. They think they've got a talent maybe in this kind of thing. What's the best route to go?
Well, I mean, the thing is, I see the, it is important to have studied. The most important thing is, if you want to go into musicals and musical theatre, you have to want to be in that world. It's not a world in which you can, like, go, well, maybe I'll dabble in that a little.
Mm, okay.
You know, it is a commitment. It is a commitment. You have to have as much of a love of theater and drama and that art form as you do of music. And it's you need to have an instinctive knowing how to make the both of them work together.
I'm going to ask you to do something for me quickly because because you're a professional and you can assess this. I've got two talented people who work with us here who are very much into musical theatre. One of them is very dramatic.
Yes.
Sia, who you've met outside.
He is very dramatic.
Very dramatic. He's very keen to get into that kind of thing. He's a performer by nature. You can tell that.
I could, yes.
The other one is Katlego, who's not here now, but she has asked me to give this to you to appraise.
Okay.
There's a Whitney Houston musical going on. Have you heard of it?
I saw it.
You've seen it. What is your feeling about Whitney Houston's musical?
it's not, it has really weak production value.
Oh, he's starting with a criticism, okay.
But she is off the chart.
Now, if we had the cast here.
She is off the chart, and I want to say, I want to see her, being a local girl who she is, mm-hmm. from PE.
Yeah. Do you know her name? Okay.
Belinda Davids.
Okay, Belinda Davids. Yeah. There we go. Her name was... Blah, blah, blah. I was going to say shame. That's unfortunate. She's not
Belinda
go
Davids.
All right.
No, she is... she's from PE and the company who has created the show found her.
Yeah.
She has gone around the world with it, but I want to see her find her own voice.
In other words, she's doing a really good Whitney, but now she needs to be Belinda.
Yes.
Okay. Now I need you to appraise and evaluate. First, Katlego, she's doing a famous song from that musical.
So I guess I'm not your fourth idol judge.
No, but who knows? You might be. I mean, I can't reveal, you know? Let's just start you off anyway. Here is Katlego singing I'm Every Woman. You know the song?
Yes.
You tell me what you think of this. All right, here she is. From the Whitney Houston musical, here's Katlego Molai. Are you ready? Say, Brian Schimmel, your words.
What do you say in the nicest way?
Next.
Okay, let's try. All right, that's very nice. At least you move on very swiftly. Now, Sia Sangweni Finn doing I Have Nothing. All right, this is a big song from the musical. It's a big moment for Whitney in her life. You remember from the Bodyguard soundtrack, I Have Nothing. Take it away, Sia. Does he have talent? Only Brian Schimmel will be able to tell us.
Make me close one more door. I don't want to hurt anymore. Stay in my arms if you dare. Who must I imagine you there? Don't walk away from me. No, I have nothing, nothing, nothing. I don't have you.
What's your feeling there?
Why didn't you just stop it? I have nothing.
You may be a brilliant idols judge. I'll tell you what, if I decide to leave the show, you're in. All right? Wow.
That is ridiculous.
No talent here?
No.
No. Yeah. I'm sorry, Sia. There we go. It's not just me who thinks your singing is terrible. Tell me about this meth addiction. I mean, in some ways, you're probably the candidate for any kind of addiction because God knows you had to put up with a lot. And sometimes these kinds of things give people a place to just let go and be.
Well,
is that what happened?
I'll put it into context. Between 1995 and 2002, I lived in the States because I'd reached a point by 1994 with a handful of keys that I'd sort of hit a peak in my life already.
You'd made good money out of that? Because it was wildly successful show. Went all over the world.
Yeah. And it was just, and I was kind of at that stage of being itchy and I wanted to go and explore America and Broadway and you know, and be amongst that.
Well, it's obviously the next logical step for someone who's reached the peak in this country and you've got to go, and in other countries, Broadway is the top of the pyramid, right?
Sure. And the thing is, I went over on a visa, which was a talent visa.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have to have a job offer. I didn't have to have a sponsor, nothing. I just went.
Wow.
And what you realize about the States is that it's not only about what is better there, because there is better and there's crap.
Mm-hmm.
It's the numbers and the size. So
you can have 25 theaters in Midtown Manhattan and
correct.
All of them can be in business.
Correct. And you realize that talent here in South Africa is still regarded as being special. Talent in New York is not. It's a given.
Wow.
It's a given. And you have to go, okay, now I'm already flattened. Mm-hmm. What makes me different? So the first thing I encountered was that. The second thing I encountered was, we are not born in a culture in this country, black or white, of shameless self-marketing.
Yes.
Americans are breastfed. It's in the milk.
Right.
They're breastfed. Absolutely. On the art of shameless self-promotion.
I couldn't have said it better. You know what? How many times people pitch up for auditions on Idols, since it's come up once or twice in this morning's show.
Yeah.
And they arrive there and they're talented, but they have no confidence and they don't know the first thing about putting their best foot forward.
But then you get the, but then you'll have a guy who has half of your capability who gets the job because he just knows how to sell himself.
Right.
Which, and that was where I fell short. So, take that challenge, firstly. Secondly, take the challenge of the speech, which I was starting to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Also, bear in mind, we had come out of post 94.
Mm-hmm.
Until 94, besides in the apartheid era, it was hard in this country, but being gay.
Sure.
Because it was still considered illegal. It was.
Well, you could be locked up for what was they call it, sodomy, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And so, bearing in mind, I've come from that in this closed environment, on the Jewish upbringing that was sheltered,
mm-hmm.
into the world. Of the village.
Like flamboyant and New York.
Right.
Craziness. And
the village.
And sexual promiscuity up the yin yang.
Up the everything.
All right. You don't have to get graphic. You know, you have to take it there. All right.
And you suddenly find yourself like you're a kid in a candy. Well, this is Cliff Central.
Sure.
But, you know, you find yourself like a kid in a candy store.
Just a smorgasbord.
And you. And you suddenly go, I'm alone. I'm receptive to all new things and I'm open to, and I'm vulnerable. I'm emotionally vulnerable.
You must have had so much sex.
I did. I made up for years as a teenager that I didn't have. Okay.
All I hear is Tina Turner's Steamy Windows playing in the background.
And along with that came a discovery of what people were doing, mm-hmm. to enhance sex.
So they would. This is where meth came in.
Right. And crystal meth is a very big homosexual drug.
Okay.
It makes you horny as hell.
Okay.
And you can go for days. Days.
Look, Mabali says that she's willing to go gay just to try the crystal meth.
Yes, I am.
Okay. And, you know, when I started it, I was introduced to at parties,
mm-hmm.
and it was cool. And then I started to order it myself,
mm-hmm.
and it was once a month, then it was twice a month, then it was every weekend, then it was and the absolute cliche of most addicts in the beginning is, I have it under control.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I didn't realize then that I was on this, on this downward spiral. And you don't get hooked on the drug itself. It's not like heroin, which I haven't done, by the way.
I've heard that's the end game.
Right. But heroin is when you get hooked on the actual substance.
Right.
Here you get it's the high, it's the rush, and it goes on and on and on. And the thing is, why you then start going on with it and doing more and more and more, is because you're being up all the time and awake, and your serotonin levels are way up and all that kind of stuff. When you come down, it's hell. The come downs are so bad, and
Do you feel depressed?
Suicidal.
Okay.
How does that? You wake up.
I mean, eventually you fall asleep.
Okay.
I mean, you haven't eaten for 4 days.
I need to know. I think Mubs and I are asking the same thing.
Okay.
How does it feel? What do you do? Like,
when you're on it, when you're on it, it makes you feel completely like powerful.
Mm-hmm. Invincible.
Invincible. Mm-hmm. It breaks down all barriers. You suddenly are willing to and interested in exploring avenues you wouldn't have otherwise. And life is great. Life is a really good place.
But the come down, the crash.
But the crash is hideous because you can, as I say, I would start on a Friday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And I would eventually fall asleep on like a Tuesday morning. And
holy hell, that must mess your body up too. Yeah.
It screws you up completely because you go, first of all, there's a reason that deprivation of sleep is used as a torture method. We're not built to go for that long without sleep. So here you are imposing some form of substance which is giving you a form of pleasure, but at the same time is completely wiping you out. You also don't eat on it, and so you might have one yogurt and one banana in like 2 days.
Good lord, that can't be good either.
You must
eventually become emaciated.
And I did.
Yeah.
And eventually you reach the point, which is where I reached, of going in to what I call maintenance mode, which is where you're not even doing it to get high.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting it, it's just doing enough each day to just stay level.
Wow.
And I'd reached the point in 2002 where I mean, I'd been working, but it had been hard because of a thing, as I said, you are facing numbers and you are constantly having to market yourself and sell yourself. It's not a case of like it
pressure,
is.
Pressure.
All the time.
Right.
And what I didn't realize is that it was a void of loneliness, vulnerability. It was all that stuff.
I can see a picture. I mean, I don't know if this comes from a movie or if it's something I've imagined, but I imagine this picture of you now sitting in a New York apartment with that air conditioning unit under the window and yes. A grimy, dirty window.
Yeah.
In the winters covered with snow.
Yep.
You're sitting in there. You're depressed. You can't get out of bed. You're thin. You're sick. You're unhappy.
That was the picture.
And you have to now drag yourself off to go and perform.
That was the picture.
To be, you know, showing off to other people. What a nightmare.
And that was the picture. And in the
what a nightmare. How do you break out of this, Brian?
Well, you know,
how do people save themselves? So many people don't.
Well, there was a point in 2001 where I was very suicidal.
Yeah.
I mean, as in the point of I had it all planned.
How were you going to kill yourself?
I've been asked that a few times. You know, if you're going to do it, make sure you do it well.
Right.
You know.
So you were serious about this. This wasn't like a cry for help. You were going to kill yourself.
I was going to do it. I had a bottle of scotch.
Okay.
I mean, all the Maryland,
all the big Hollywood,
Hollywood suicides. A bottle of scotch, had a bottle of sleeping pills.
Okay.
I was going to take the sleeping pills, the scotch, turn on the gas oven.
Trying to get into the picture here.
Turn right. on the gas oven.
You're going to burn yourself to death in the oven.
And then I was just going to
light the flames.
I was going to turn on the gas.
You're going to do a Sylvia Plath.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was going to inhale the gas.
Okay.
And slash my wrists.
All of it. You were going to make double sure.
Make sure that it was done.
You had a plan.
And you ask me what it was that I, but that, that in that moment I went, no, I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
It was my mom. She knew that there was a lot happening with me. She didn't know details, and I kept her in the dark about details. And you know, I'd go for weeks on end and not email, and weeks on end and not phone.
Mm.
And but she always, all through school, all through my dad, all through everything, my mom had always supported me unconditionally. And it was in that moment I went, suicide is the most courageous thing anyone can do.
I agree with you.
But it's the most selfish.
Because those people who are left have to pick up the pieces.
And I thought, how can I do this to her?
After all she's done.
After
for
all
you.
She's done. And that was the moment I went, screw this.
Jesus. So how did you clean up? What do you start with? Cold turkey?
I phoned her.
Yeah.
I said, send me an air ticket. I'm coming home.
You basically wrote another note saying, I need a friend. And you said to your mom, meet me behind the hall.
Yeah.
That's what you were saying.
Correct. And I came home, and when I came home, I realized what I'd missed. Love, family, friendship, acknowledgement, importance, responsibility, all that kind of stuff. And the last 11 years, I haven't looked back. And yes, it was cold turkey. Mm. I came home and I literally ate and slept for, I think, 2 weeks. That's all I did. I ate and I slept.
Well, your mother sounds like like saintly. I mean,
she was
someone incredible to put up. And also at this point, the one thing we haven't referred to is that you came back with, you were HIV positive.
Yes. Now that happened at the same time as being high on drugs.
Yeah, it must have been, because you would have been careless.
I was totally careless.
You didn't have protected, careful sex.
No.
It was just whatever, wherever, whenever,
yeah,
whoever. Any famous people you managed to have a go at while you were there? You could maybe drop in one famous name or two here. Let us feel like you...
I wouldn't say famous, you know, but anybody who's watched gay porn.
Really? Oh. You've got with gay porn stars?
Yes.
Hmm.
Yes.
There are a lot of those in New York?
Yes.
Wow. And in the theater community, obviously, lots of... No?
Well,
not gay porn stars in the theater community.
I know.
Wow.
I mean, every dancer's a, you know...
No, don't finish that sentence. Be pleased you have a stutter, because you're going to upset a lot of people. Most of the people you're putting shows together for. All right. This is amazing. So you made it, Brian, you made it through all of this shit. You got there.
I'm going to quote Barry Manilow.
I made it through the rain. That's it. Wow.
Do you know, and so with all of that, coming through all that and going, I've got a story to tell. And inspire people, whether it's by the way I live now, which is in health and in fitness, which is my other addiction now.
Mm.
I think
it's a better addiction than the other ones.
But, you know, I think what I've realized.
I heard that you were in the gym the other day, and you sent a note to one of the guys who was changing. You said, "Meet me behind the locker room." Is that true? Is that what happened?
I don't even need. Okay. These days, you don't send notes. It's just it's a text message. It's a text message.
Aren't you glad about cell phones? Now, just
meet me in the sauna.
To finish the story, because it is a really positive story. I think a lot of people could learn from it. And there's just so much that you've overcome. And I know that you've got this generosity of spirit,
because
I've seen you helping people. I've seen you doing a lot of stuff for free. I've seen you particularly interested in talented young people who can play instruments, who can sing, who can do something with music. And you are a mentor to these people.
Sure.
With the youth orchestra, what's your plan here? What do you want to do with them?
Well, I mean, as it exists, there are about 650 kids between the ages of 12 and 24. As it exists already, there are about 10 ensembles.
It's a lot to manage.
made up of kids from Joburg, Everton, Sebokeng, Soweto. Uh-huh. And it's just, it's giving youth, who are talented, platforms, and giving them education. And I want to see that expand, and I want to see how music is used as a tool of political and social
change, development.
Change, yeah.
Right. I'm curious also because I think that this is exactly what you were always meant to do, because you were that kid with a musical talent once.
Yeah.
The kids at UC. Do you ever look at these young guys and girls and go, you know, that's me. That's me a couple of years ago.
Yes.
And now I have the chance to be the water polo captain and save them and give them something to hope for.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
What a story, man. Listen, I love talking to you. We've yented it up for almost an hour. This is ridiculous. Before you go, I think we should have a short shorts challenge. Just one quick fashion show, because Ben is wearing the worst shorts I've ever seen in my life. Have you seen Ben's shorts? Give Brian a little walk around here. Ben is going to do a fashion show for us, and then, of course, we'll have Brian do his, and we'll decide. Flax, you want to come in and film this? This may be a good one to film. Okay, we're going to start off with Ben Karpinski wearing the worst brown shorts you've ever seen in your life. He says the Togo team, or which team was it during the World Cup that wore these?
For my fitness sets today, I need to be in very comfortable clothing. And yeah, this was the African Cup of Nations kit for Togo back in...
Ben is going to the High Performance Center in these very, very short shorts. Let's see whose shorts... Who wore it gayer? Ben or Brian Schimmel? Go, give us a walk, Ben. There we go.
Ben is
wearing the brown shorts.
Can I just say that one of the weird things about Ben's shorts, he looks like he's wearing a pair of tights underneath.
Well, I was about to say.
And then he put a pair of shorts.
Brian, we need you to appraise this as well,
please. On top of the tights.
Well, it's just
a very, very weird pair of shorts.
Well, I mean, first of all, anybody who's wearing brown or tan is just already a no-no in gay world.
Okay, so that's a no. I'm sorry. And, too straight for Brian.
And the tights under the shorts is stuck very 1990s.
It's a bolt. Okay. Exactly.
Brian, would you mind doing a walk for us? Here's Brian Schimmel now wearing his shorts. Who wore it gayer, Brian Schimmel or Ben Karpinski this morning? What a day of competitions.
Let me just say that the muscle definition in Brian's legs is quite impressive.
All right, buddy, you're going to be the one eventually who makes the deciding call.
Cool. He shaves his legs.
He's got good, strong calves.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see the muscle bulging through that thigh. Mm. Really?
Amazing. That's amazing. I mean, well done, Brian. I think you've got this one down. Mm. I think we can hand this over. It's a definite win. Brian Schimmel, the winner of Who Wore It Gayer. Yeah. Very nice to have you here, Brian.
I'll concede that.
Thank you so much, man. It's a pleasure to see you.
Thanks.
All the best with the youth. If people want to get involved, they want to come and see the ensembles performing, where can we do this?
Okay, there are a number of live performances, and particularly there's always one major one every year. Last year there was a concert of Elvis Blue, who was accompanied by the orchestra.
Very good.
We are still finalizing our artists who will be performing this year, but it'll be in the media, and I will alert you.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be in June.
All right.
And
is there a website?
Yes, JYOC.
Johannesburg Youth Orchestra
Company.
Right.
.org.
Very
dot
good.
ZA.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Pleasure to see you, Brian.
Thanks, Gareth.
And if people want to meet you behind the hall, where can they get hold of you if they want to meet you behind the hall and be your friend?
I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, and I have a website.
We love you. Thank you, man.
Cool.
Thank you so much.
Right.
Brian Schimmel, everybody. It's 11 after 8. What a morning. Thursday.